Big shout out to our amazing sponsors, Outlaw Distillery. Looking for exceptional spirits to elevate your taste buds? Well, look no further than Outlaw Distillery. With their extraordinary spice rum and honey bourbon gracing the shelves of liquor stores, your drinking experience is about to reach new heights. And here's the best part. Outlaw Distillery is opening its doors to all you adventurous souls. Join the tour and step inside the lair where the magic happens. From the art of distillation to the secrets behind their mouth-watering recipes, this is a chance to witness craftsmanship at its finest. Here's a little something extra for our family. Outlaw Distillery is offering an incredible 40% discount on all tours. Just use the code FAMILY when booking your visit to the Spirited Haven. It's an experience you will not want to miss. Not only does Outlaw Distillery excel in crafting top-notch spirits, but they also believe in giving back to their community. So, if you're ready to taste the adventure and embrace the allure of finely crafted spirits, head to your nearest liquor store and grab a bottle of Outlaw Distillery. And remember, the best is yet to come when you step inside Outlaw Distillery with the exclusive Framily discount. Cheers to thrilling libations and unforgettable memories. See you at Outlaw. Shout out to our sponsors, King's Peak Coffee Roasters. At King's Peak, they take coffee seriously. Their beans are sourced with utmost care from sustainable farms worldwide, ensuring that each sip is a celebration of exquisite flavors. From captivating blends to captivating single origin roasts, their coffee selection promises to tantalize your taste buds and elevate your coffee game to new heights. King's Peak staff embodies the spirit of hospitality and passion for coffee. With smiles that brighten your day, they're always ready to guide you on an unforgettable coffee journey. From bean selection to brewing techniques, their knowledgeable baristas will happily share their expertise to help you find your perfect cup. King's Peak is committed to making a positive impact on the entire coffee supply chain. With every purchase, you're supporting farmers and artisans, enabling sustainable practices and empowering communities around the globe. Together, we're nurturing a brighter, more inclusive future for everyone involved. Whether you're a coffee aficionado or a curious newcomer, King's Peak is your welcoming sanctuary. Explore their wide array of coffees, accessories, and gifts, and let King's Peak help you find the perfect fit for your unique taste. They're not just a coffee shop, but a community that embraces the joy of coffee and human connection. Join us at King's Peak Coffee Roasters, where coffee dreams come true. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, family, I am here in Eden, Utah, like the cooler side of Ogden. And I'm here with one of my dear friends, Mr. James Fowler. James, how you doing?
Good morning. Hey, thanks for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for chauffeuring me up here.
Yeah, it was a beautiful drive.
That was. We had a good... Yeah, we saw some cows getting out of their
out of the fence.
Out of the fence. Saw some people, chasing them down. Yeah. We almost hit a couple bikers. Yeah. You almost hit a couple bikers. Yeah. I didn't. But yeah, thanks for the drive, man. Yeah. Had a good time. And I'm here, we are both here in the house of New World Distillery. And we have someone that I have yet to meet today, but you are good friends with. So you go ahead and introduce our guest today, James.
So this is Chris with New World Distilling.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Cross, right?
Yeah, thanks for showing up.
Yeah, thanks for having this place here. It's so beautiful. I think one of the things you said, James, was like, this is going to be probably the most cleanest distillery you'll walk into.
Oh, absolutely. Chris does a great job with housekeeping.
Yeah, I'm also a clean freak, so it's really cool to see, like, I appreciate your clean floors. I appreciate the clean decor, and everything is spotless over here. So congrats, Chris.
I'll give credit to my wife on that. So as a co-owner, she has a lot to say about
how clean it is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But Chris, New World Distillery, man. I mean, I want to get to know who you are because you are the head distiller, correct?
Yes.
Owner and founder, co-owner, I guess. Your wife, you just said that. Let's get to know you. What's your background? Are you from Utah?
No, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, but I left when I was 18. We still try to get back from time to time, but left when I was 18, started my military career at that point. So moved around for 24 years in the military, ended up actually being assigned here in Utah. That's how we got to know Utah.
Cool.
And then we decided we wanted to stay. We love living here. We loved raising our kids here, and they definitely identify as Ogdenites.
Ogdenites, that's a new word. I've been hearing O-Towns. O-Towners.
Yeah, O-Towner, you know? Ogdenites. Yeah.
I fought someone on the O-Town because I grew up most of my life in Orem.
Okay.
In Utah. Yeah, so yeah. I thought that was O-Town, but I got scorned.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
So I'm the fake one.
Yeah. I think Ogden's the O-Town.
Yeah, sure. I learned my lesson. I was wrong, everyone. But Chris, what branch in the military did you serve?
I kind of got a strange story. All my active duty time was in the Navy. So I left when I was 18, left Phoenix when I was 18. I went to the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. Then I got a flight school position, and then I had a flying career. All that time, active duty time in the Navy, I flew F-18s. And then my last assignment in the Navy, I got assigned here at Hill Air Force Base. I was the one Navy exchange pilot on base flying S-16. So I got to change airplanes.
The one and
there.
Only.
The one and only.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it was a great deal. I call it a command of one. It's the best command ever. I was only in charge of myself, which is the greatest thing ever. But since I was current in the airplane at that point, I got off the active duty and I became a reservist as an Air Force reservist. So I did 11 more years at Hill as an Air Force reservist flying F-16s.
Oh my God. You're like the Top Gun of distillers.
There's pretty close to that. It's pretty close, actually.
Holy cow. Because James was telling me this, you know, you're flying jets, and I think I said I wanted to fly a jet, but I would shit myself, and I didn't want to shit myself in a jet.
You know what I said? That's exactly what you said.
But James, you wanted to get into a fighter jet, right?
Oh yeah, I would love to fly a fighter jet. I have my commercial, I have my CFI license.
Yeah.
So more of a hobby. I used to fly a little bit.
How fast have you gone before? What's the fastest you've gone in an airplane?
It would be in the 200s. It's not too fast. Nothing like Chris.
Chris, what's the fastest you've been in a plane? Or let's go around there.
Well, the
range.
Limit on the airplane is Mach 2.05 or 800 knots calibrated. So it depends on what altitude you're at, which number you see first. The 800 knots calibrated is way more scary than the Mach 2.05, but I've seen both numbers.
That is awesome.
Oh my God. I think I just shit myself. That's insane to me, but congrats.
It is insane.
We were talking about how you still have your hearing somehow.
I know. So, I don't know how.
Congrats,
I mean, everybody,
man.
I know has lost it over the time just because you're around noisy airplanes.
Yeah.
But somehow I managed to retain my hearing.
Are you still active by chance?
Oh, no. I haven't flown since I retired. Mm-hmm. I test drove a couple airplanes. I was thinking about getting an airplane, but I got this instead. Distillery here instead.
This is really cool. Yeah, so let's get into it. So when did New World Distillery open?
We opened December 10th of 2016, but it was about a three-year process for us. It was end of 2013 when we made a decision, okay, let's go down this path and open a distillery, and it took us a full 3 years to get open. We were hoping to be open earlier than that, of course, like most people are, but I always tell people it took literally every one of those 3 years to get everything lined up. There's a lot of things behind the scenes you don't realize that go into, you know, opening a business. You know, for us, it was about getting all our brand names trademarked, getting all of our art trademarked. You know, we need to have all that done before we ever screen printed, you know, thousands and thousands of bottles. We wanted to have all that lined up. And we built a building from the ground up. So that takes a while.
This is original then.
Yeah, this is from the ground up, purpose built.
And where did New World come from? Where's that concept?
It comes from a couple things. My wife usually tells this story, so I'll have to try to do it justice. But she was a public educator for 23 years, was teaching at Davis High for a long, long time, you know, ever since we were here in Utah. And we were both on what we called a 15-year plan to retirement. I would have a retirement, military retirement. She would have her teaching retirement. And then it was in 2013, shortly after we'd moved up here to Eden, that she just one day told me that I'm quitting my job. And that kind of changed everything. And she had just got burned out after 23 years in public education. She said, it's become my whole world, and I need a new world. And that's where we are now here today.
That was smooth.
That is really cool.
I did not catch that. Wow, good for you. I need a new world.
Yeah.
Wow. So is this Ashley's baby then?
don't tell her that, but in large part it is.
That's
at least
beautiful.
The name is, but yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be some type of a nautical compass-esque kind of thing.
No, it's just... that story, literally.
Beautiful.
One night, and she tells me I'm quitting my job, which was a shocker, right?
Right.
Wasn't the plan. That's what I said. Wow. That's not the plan.
So what made you open a distillery in Utah? I have this idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, James, you probably can vouch for this, but I think it's difficult to open a distillery in Utah. So why Utah?
Because we live here. We like the area we live up here in the valley as well. We wanted to stay here if we could. And we knew it was going to be difficult because it's Utah, but I had no idea how difficult it was actually going to be until you actually get in the industry and you're on the other side of the fence. You know it's going to be difficult, but it was way tougher than I thought it was going to be. It was a challenge for sure. That's why I kind of told you, you know, if we had to do all over again, we might want to do it someplace else. I mean, obviously, I think we're in the long run, we're going to win the battle.
I love that.
The local manufacturers are going to win the battle. But I think it's, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, one step forward, two steps back, and it's been pretty difficult.
Yeah. Why Eden, Utah? Just because it didn't have a space?
We live here. We like this from a manufacturing zone perspective. We're pretty happy with it. You know, this is where we decided, and after we got our kids out of the house, so we wanted to move up here to the Valley. So we wanted to have it as local as possible.
Yeah.
And we always said if we didn't do it, someone else would, and then we'd be crushed. You know, we'd be living here in Eden, and there would be someone else that had a distillery here, and we'd just be soul crushed.
Yeah, I would kick my own ass if I didn't jump on something like that. Yeah. I mean, my wife recently did something like that, where if she didn't make this opportunity, this jump, she'd be kicking her own ass for the rest of her life. And that, to me, is devastating to the soul, to this, you know, everything. It's cool that you did Eden, Utah. Before I knew where Eden was, when I first met you guys 2 years ago, I believe, it was 2001, 21, mm-hmm. I was like, where the hell is Eden? I thought it was like by Tremonton or Logan, like out in boondocks. But no, it's just literally on the prettier side of Ogden.
Exactly.
You're 20 minutes away from Ogden.
20 minutes from Ogden, yeah. And it's a beautiful drive, like you guys said coming up today. I mean, we're a destination. You know, we get all the biker traffic, all the car club traffic. You know, Trapper's Loop and the Ogden Canyon are a regular destination for people on weekends. So we do get a lot of tourist traffic into the Valley.
And then you have some of the coolest ski resorts up here. Like that. What James and I are talking about, how it's more private than the big leagues.
I think Powder Mountain and Snow Basin are the best resorts out there. I mean, there's less people. There's more space. There's a lot of space.
I would totally agree with you. Yeah. I've done a lot of days on both mountains, and now I happen to live right next door to Nordic Valley as well. So I'm definitely very, very familiar with all three resorts and spent a lot of time on them.
Yeah. Chris, we didn't even talk to you about your selections yet, but I feel like I want your job when I retire. I think I want this. I want to live in the, you know, close enough where I can go to a Walmart, but in the BFE. And somewhere that's super rad, super beautiful, and that my wife had the name. Like, I want that. I want your life right now.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate the support.
Yeah. I'm glad that you hustled or stuck with it, and you're still here. And, you know, even though you're in Eden, and New World's still getting the name out there. I feel like we're still under, like, every time I hear about New World, every single person, I'm not just trying to kiss your ass because you're right here, but I've heard great things, especially with that agave spirit, the agave spirit. And then you like to, we were talking about how that creative passion's still there because you have a little small batch series you've been doing.
Yeah, we have a series we call the Uncharted Series, and it's our single batch, single barrel seasonal label. So we quite often have a single barrel version of something or a seasonal version. Right now, we currently have our seasonal apple brandy. This is the seventh time we released that, but it's something we can do on a small scale every year, just depending on what's available locally.
Yeah, and then how big is your staff here at New World?
We have 5 employees now. We had kind of reached a homeostasis at 6, and then we lost a couple, and we were really understaffed, but now we're back up to 5, feeling better about it now for sure. But we're definitely short on some aspects. We were talking about it a little earlier. We don't have a dedicated sales staff. We tried to like have people do that as a collateral duty or something, probably not very effectively. Mm-hmm. That's how we do things.
Right. So I know you and James have a relationship been going on. How long has this relationship been going on?
I was thinking about that as we started the podcast. I remember Chris and Ashley coming in to the distillery. You're driving the convertible, and I think we had a special release. And you know, you're like, "Hey, we're gonna open a distillery." And there was something about it. We hear that a lot, but I knew it was real. Like you could tell that they had done their homework. They knew what they were doing. And you actually came down a few times. It was more than just that,
sure.
And it was always fun to see him. A lot of fun, but.
And now I like to tell people that my wife, Ashley, and James and Alan from Water Pocket are in a constant 3-way text battle. So yeah,
they are.
They're constantly, constantly talking every day.
Well, you just named some heavy hitters in the industry. I mean, everyone loves Alan. I haven't met Ashley yet, but I've heard, I mean, I got Ashley's information before I got your information. That's how much James likes.
Well, I know.
You know what I mean?
I can't find your information on my phone. Your name wasn't popping up.
I get that.
No, but you know, James is one of the OGs. Like, coming from the beer world, you got to have those local legends and those people that are always going to take their shirt off their back for you. And James, you're one of them, my man. I mean, I brag about you all the time.
Thank you.
And Alan is an underrated, beautiful, beautiful man as a wizard at what he does. And Ashley, obviously, this is her baby, right? And Chris, I'm excited to see. Just listening to you this past, you know, 2 hours or so, just I want your job. I want to make cooking this right now. I want to ferment. I want to do all of it right now. Because this is a cool spot.
Come
man.
On up and we can I'm do going it side to. By
I
side.
Have Mondays off now, so Mondays will be here.
And we're closed on Mondays, so
it works out. Perfect. No, but James, you saw New World say, hey, we're going to start a distillery, and you believed it. How long did you see, or what was it about the crosses that you believed in that?
One, I could tell they had talked to the DABC. At the time, they were at the DABC. But also that I totally enjoyed their passion. I mean, I could tell that they wanted to use local products, use things from the state, and they had talked to people. So I just knew that I knew it was going to happen. You know, it was, and exactly, I mean, a little bit, I want you to talk about some of the local products that you guys use and,
right.
and tell us the stories of, you know, where you're getting your cherries from, you know, the stuff for your brandy and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. We try to use, you know, local products as much as we can. We started using Paradise Valley Orchard up in Cache Valley for the first couple of years for apples. And now we switched to Perry, Utah. It's Riley Farm Fresh up there. His number one product is peaches. So we're trying to figure out that how we're going to get that into the lineup this fall.
Ooh.
Got some pretty good ideas there. And we also are looking at pears, which is another thing he does. But he also has a lot of apples. So we've been using him now several years in a row. To press our cider for us right here locally in Perry. And then we've had the Wasatch Blossom Tart Cherry Liqueur in our lineup since August of 2017. And exclusively, we get our cherries from the Woodyatt Farm up in Willard, Utah. So we've been with them from day one using their cherries for our cherry liqueur.
That's so cool. And then I know, James, we were talking about last time when you and I were talking about neutral grain spirits. Does that ever come in here?
That's the base for our gin. Mm-hmm. How gin is made is you start with a neutral spirit. In our case, it's neutral corn. So that's the only neutral we use in our lineup here is for making gin. That's how gin is made. The flavoring of gin actually occurs during the distillation step in the process. So you start with the neutral spirit, add your botanicals to the boiler, and then the flavoring occurs during that distillation when you're extracting the oils from those botanicals that go into our gin.
So I think a lot of times people want that base spirit to be really neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if you try to make your base spirit, a lot of times it will have a lot of flavor in it.
Okay.
And so with gin, I think neutral grain is probably the way to go.
The safest, if you will.
It's also the most common. It's 99% of the world makes their gin that way. I always tell people we, you know, are one of the few distilleries that have an incredible capability to actually make the best neutral in the world, but then it would be a $70 bottle of gin at that point.
Yeah. Can't
do
that.
Yeah. So we can't do that. So it's much more cost effective and we get the same result by bringing in the neutral corn that we use in our gin. If we made that corn ourselves, neutral corn ourselves, which we certainly could do, it would literally double the price of our gin.
Wow. Yeah. It doesn't make sense at all at that point.
Yeah.
And then you guys have been in the gin world pretty heavy. I mean, you guys make some damn good gin. You have the only agave spirit, I believe, in Utah. And then you make bourbon too well that you have to upscale to kind of bring in bourbon again, right? So
yeah.
How's the bourbon game going?
So our you know leading product is our launch product was the Umaji and it's still our number one seller today, pretty handily. And our number two seller is our Blanco agave spirit. So that is definitely my passion. You know, that's where I came into the industry is from the agave spirit world.
Okay.
I had to become a gin geek along the way, and I'm certainly a gin geek now for sure. But yeah, the Blanco agave spirits is our number two seller in our lineup as well. And what was the question?
I don't even fucking know now. No, so that was your number one seller. So the bourbon.
The bourbon was in there. That's the part I forgot. Yeah, so we started making bourbon. We didn't have the capability in-house to make it when we opened. Mm-hmm. It was once we upgraded to the 2,000-liter fractioning column we have now, because we didn't have a mash capability in-house until we bought that device. So that's when we started making bourbon, as once we had the capability to mash in-house. But it does have a cult following. We've released the bourbon 9 times to date. Our last release was just June 11th of this year, but it literally sells out instantly. We have what we call the campers outers out there in the parking lot in the morning. The line forms really early. We had people as early as 6 a.m. waiting in line out there.
That's awesome.
It's pretty crazy.
It's like a Black Friday kind of thing.
The problem is now it has this cult-like following. We just can't meet the demand. it was partly because of our capacity in-house, and then the barrel shortage here recently is what really has crushed us on the ability to meet that demand. But we have a plan. We have a brand new 2,000-liter fresh and column that, to make our bourbon more frequently so we can actually solve the problem. But it'll take us years because that's how long bourbon takes. It takes years.
Right, and I was telling you guys earlier that I don't know how. Maybe this is why you drink liquor, because you guys have patience that I lack. You can ask my wife that too. I mean, that's why I'm a beer maker, because I see the turnover with, you know, I can wait 6 weeks on a lager. Sure, you know, I can enjoy it for the next couple of weeks. But you guys have to sit on it for fucking years. Yeah. How do you guys do it?
It's painful. Not only is it a patience thing, but it's a financial impact too, because you're putting a lot of money away that you're not going to see for quite some time. So that's something that people need to take into account, is how much money you've got storing that you can't actually recoup until you finally put it in the bottle.
Yeah. And that's a big thing with, you know, the DABS, is that you list a product and you may have, you know, $750,000, $1 million of product behind that, and it can be gone as quick as it was listed. And it takes years, you know, it could take 4 or 5 years to get that going. And within 6 months, there could be a decision of, oop, that's gone, you know.
Wow.
It's a really good example. And that's why we only sell our Reposado Agave Spirits here at the distillery. If we were going to stock it in the store shelves and be able to meet that demand, we'd have to put a lot more away in barrels. And then you have that chance they're not going to put it on the shelf, or they're going to take it off the shelf. So that's why we only sell that aged spirit here at the distillery, which is unfortunate because it's an amazing spirit.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't think of it that way, because I bitch about and complain about having my beer in a warm, unkept warehouse. But that to me is minute compared to what you guys have to do. I think it's a year's process. You have to think about it. You have to, I haven't actually ever thought of that in that depth.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, is it public what your mash bill is on the bourbon?
It isn't.
You like it being a mystery.
In a word, but I do like to talk about it. Yeah. And I talk to people about it all the time on the tour that want to talk bourbon.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, you know, if you go to Kentucky and go on the bourbon trail, if you really start looking at mash bills, there's very little creativity there.
Yeah.
There's little subtle differences here. It might be a wheated bourbon, might be a little higher rye or something.
Yeah.
But there's very little creativity, specifically when it comes to the corn content. They're all really close to each other for corn content. There's a lot of room to work with in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It only has to be 51% corn. You got half the mash bill to work with, and they're only working with a quarter of the mash bill available to them. So I always tell people, in a nutshell, our bourbon is much lower corn. It's a little tiny bit higher rye. That leaves a lot of room in there to work with, right?
Yeah.
And that's our secret ingredient. We have a secret grain in there, and it's the one right in the middle. So you get that corn at the beginning, you get that rye at the end, but we have a secret ingredient right in the middle of our bourbon.
Fennel. Yeah. Lots of fennel. So, James, why do you bring up this... Are you honest with the bottle? Did you have to, as a distiller, have to put?
Oh no, no. So a mash bill. Some people, you know, talk about it openly. Of like us, we put our mash bill right on the bottle. There's nothing wrong with people that, you know, they want to hold that a little bit closer to themselves, and so you kind of see both directions in the industry.
Gotcha.
So
when we were developing our bourbon, it took us a long time. Luckily, I had a 6-liter fractioning column here on loan, so it allows you to experiment at a reasonable scale without spending a lot of money. But we worked on that for a long time, and I'll never forget the final day where I took a couple samples home. We sat at our dining room table. I go, "This is the day we decide, you know, what our mash bill is. You know, this is our final decision. Once we've done it, right?" And I'll never forget that day we sat down and we tasted two different samples and we picked one, you know, and that's our mash bill. So, you know, I like to have the secret, the mystery in there. You know, I've had a couple people figure it out. And typically it's the beer drinkers.
Fennel, told you.
Yeah. It's the beer drinkers that'll figure it out. And I always tell them when they're right, of course. But I like having a little bit of a mystery there.
Yeah.
Creates a little demand, a little desire.
It makes it more personal, more you.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys only, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Super unique to us, for sure.
And what's the spirit you haven't distilled here that you want to distill here at New World?
I always say eventually we'll probably have more than one gin in our lineup. I'm a big fan of St. George Spirits in Alameda, California. Lance is a pioneer in the craft spirits world. I love that he has three gins in his lineup because it is a very, very diverse spirit. It's the most diverse spirit out there. I think someday I will probably have another gin in our lineup. As far as the local bartender restaurant community, they're really demanding another liqueur out of us. The Wasatch Blossom Tart Cherry liqueur is so popular. And here in Utah, where bartenders are so limited in what they can pour in a glass,
sure,
that's a really big component, the component, that 1 ounce of flavoring that you're allowed to add. So they're always begging us for another liqueur. So we're always experimenting.
That's cool.
In that line. And then, like I said, doing a couple more things using local products. You know, like I already mentioned, my desire to use peaches this year because that's what my farmer primarily grows, and a couple other things out there that we're looking at locally as well.
I'm so excited. James, what's something that you want to see at a New World that you haven't seen yet?
I would love to do, you know, maybe our bourbon and their bourbon splashed together, or our malt whiskey and their bourbon. Or
like a little blend?
A little blend would be kind of fun.
Because you guys were talking about earlier an individual master blender, if you will. Mm-hmm. And how underrated are blenders?
Extremely underrated.
Yeah.
I always tell people, you know, the people that think they're getting a bargain when they buy that single barrel Jack Daniels, you know, they're getting ripped off because they didn't have the art of making it taste like Jack Daniels. They just took whatever's in the barrel and sold it to you for a premium price. When the hard part is blending many, many barrels together to get it to taste exactly how you want it. That's the real art part of it. And it's really an underrated part of the industry is that blending to get the flavor you want.
Yeah.
Like, goes back to you guys being distillers. I mean, you have patience, but then you guys, the art you guys have, I feel is overshadowed by these bigger names.
No, absolutely.
Like, you know, the, we talked about the Tito's, the Jack Daniels, Johnny Walker's. Like, it's just hard to, you guys are, I remember, James, we were talking about taking certain barrels from here and here, and we got to blend it and make this certain variety.
Yeah.
And you can't get that again.
Exactly. It's hard to keep that consistency.
And that's the craft in it. That's like, that's what you guys live for. That's what you guys, I mean,
for sure. And there's very, very few people making whiskey in Utah. I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of whiskey sold, but there's very, very few people that are actually making whiskey. So
I heard that. Wow. I love it. But Chris, what's something in the, since you're a distiller here in Utah, what's something that's missing in the distilling scene in Utah that you want more of?
I think a little flexibility for offsite tastings and those kind of things. You know, one of my good friends is the owner of Santa Fe Spirits in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And with their distillery, they obviously have a tasting room on site.
Sure.
But in New Mexico, they're also allowed 2 remote tasting rooms.
How does that work?
That's a huge difference where they can, you know, they're out in the sticks by the airport in an industrial zone, right? They can put something downtown Santa Fe, have a tasting room, have cocktails, have food potentially even. And I think that would be a huge win for us from a business perspective here. You know, we are a little bit remote. It's a beautiful destination for sure. But I would like to be in downtown Ogden too, because that's, you know, that's our city. We're all big about Ogden, and we'd like to have a presence in Ogden as well.
Do you have to have his own space, or is there a way we could do, you know, like let's say you had a tasting room in Utah or in the Salt and Hops or something like that?
Currently, you can't do that, unfortunately. We're tied to the manufacturing premises to do tasting. So I think that would be a really good change for us from a legislative perspective, is the ability to do remote tastings or have a remote tasting room. I think that would be a huge win. What about you, James?
Colorado does the same thing. You can have 2 offsite locations. I believe that you apply when you renew your license, then you say, this is where my offsite locations are going to be.
Gotcha.
And so you can change that yearly. Going back to what Chris is saying, we have to be tied to that manufacturing license. So we have to basically have some kind of distilling or bottling or something going on at that location.
So what's wrong with, I don't know the stipulations here, but what's wrong with New World having product at Sugar House?
We could do that if we had a separated space and then they had some kind of operations going on.
So you guys have to make the product in that building.
There'd have
space.
To be something going on. I don't believe they'd have to make everything that was being sold there, but I think they would have to be some kind of operation going on.
So define operation then. How does the state see the operation?
We've yet to kind of figure that out. And they've been willing to, I think, kind of talk about that also. So if barrel aging, you know, if you could just have some barrels there, then it's a little bit easier. There are some financial hits that come along. The state of Utah is very expensive to be licensed. So when you have those second locations, you are paying more or less for a whole new distillery at that second location.
Damn. But so. Frustrating.
Yeah.
Very frustrating.
Right now, as manufacturers, our package agencies, we can only sell what we make. We can't sell other people's spirits. We can't sell beer. We can't sell wine, obviously. But you're limited to what you can sell. We're happy to have it. We sell a lot of bottles out of our little tiny shop here. I'm in Eden, Utah. But there are other states, for example, that allow distillers to sell other distillers' products in their package agencies as well. I think that would be an interesting concept as well that hasn't really been explored. Yeah. So, you know, you could be on our shelf here and we could be on your shelf there. There are other states that do allow that.
Yeah. There was some talk at the legislature last year on that they were, there's some people at the DABS that were thinking about letting us or pushing that all of us could sell each other's product.
Yeah.
So we could sell New World. New World could sell us.
Because you said the packaging is the issue, right?
Yeah, the package agency is the issue.
Right.
So that was something that was discussed. And I don't know what ever happened with it. I don't know if it never made it to, you know, how far in the legislature it went.
Because I know you guys can sell what you have the tasting room. You can sell what you produce here. Can you do a tasting as well or just sell?
Yes, we can do tastings. That's part of the manufacturing law. Gotcha. And that's kind of equal across all manufacturers, beer, wine, and spirits. It's very delineated and very common across the three major categories there. But yes, we can do tastings here as well. We do a lot of tastings here.
Could you, I don't know, I'm trying to get in the weeds in this one, but could you do a tasting of other people's product or it has to be your own product?
Only ours.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's another unfortunate thing. A lot of people say, wow, it'd be nice if I could compare that side by side.
Right.
It'd be definitely more educational, more interesting tasting. You know, if you could say, let's try your bourbon, for example, James Bourbon, yeah. You know, side by side with a big bourbon, so you can see the differences. That would be kind of nice, but we can't do that. We can only taste what we manufacture.
That limits the educational aspect of it,
totally.
Though. Damn.
Yeah, it's always fun to, you know, put a rye bourbon up against a wheated bourbon. And try them.
Right.
You know, so there's so many different things that you can do with that. And it, I think some people are like, oh, you're trying to knock down other people, but that's not the case at all. I mean,
sure.
A lot of it is no, this is what's different about these.
Yeah. I mean, you can take beer, for example. I mean, some person you may think makes the best ABC, but I think this person makes the best ABC. Let's you decide, compare it.
Yeah.
I say that all the time with gin because it is so diverse. You know, you have to try them side by side. You have to drink a lot of gins before you find what you like in gins.
Yeah.
You have to drink a lot of gins before you find things you don't like in gins too.
Correct.
And that was, you know, part of our process. It took us a year and a half to develop our Umah gin. And in that process, you need to taste a lot of other people's gins because you definitely establish some do's and don'ts. An example would be, you know, during that process, Ashley is like, I will not have anise in my gin. And that is a very common gin botanical. And I was like, well, I won't have cardamom in my gin. And the only way we did that was by tasting other gins because it's such a wide variety. And then, you know, it helped us narrow in on what we wanted. And that's why we ended up with pepper in our gin. We love gins that have pepper in them.
It's beautiful. I love you guys, dude. This is so cool. But on that, my friends, we've been there. So we're going to hit a restroom break, take a little break here and come back and taste some of this awesome product. Chris, you're getting me hot and bothered. We'll be right back, my friends. Shout out to our sponsor, Sugar House Distillery. Handcrafted from grain to glass, Sugar House has been grinding for years to bring us products that are quality over quantity. Just to name a few, their single malt whiskey, rye whiskey, which is our weekday jam, their Boilermaker series, which is a rotating collab within our family, and their canned cocktails, which are so damn good and great for any to-go adventures you have this year. Located in most liquor stores across Utah, or just head over to the distillery located on 2212 South West Temple, Monday through Friday. Tell them we sent you, and they'd love to give you a tour and possible tasting. When you think Sugar House Distillery, think local and made with love. Until the next spirit, my friends. Shout out to our sponsors, Clearwater Distilling. Utah County's only distillery is turning heads and quickly making a name for themselves. From whiskey to vodka, their unique innovation transforms the norm with incredible products like their Rene Armagnac, which is an aged French Armagnac with an American rye whiskey twist. Literally one of our favorite showcasers. Or their Scandalous, which is not like Fireball. It's an actual whiskey with quality cinnamon without any sugary taste. Also, Clearwater teams up to do a monthly cigar pairing where you come and get educated on how to properly smoke a cigar while pairing with Clearwater's lovely spirits. For more information, head to clearwaterdistilling.com, hit them up on all social media platforms, or just message us, and we'll get you started on the right path. Open 7 days a week, even on holidays. Clearwater is a must. See you there. Until the next spirits, my friends. All right, guys, we are back. I'm hot and bothered. No, so we have a lineup going on. You have a flagship of five products, correct, Chris?
Correct.
And that's
we call that our everyday five. You know, we quite often have something on our smaller batch Uncharted series label. And then from time to time, we'll have the bourbon in stock. Not very often, but from time to time. We call this lineup right here our everyday five.
Everyday five. When they consist of what again?
Our Ogden Valley vodka, both our Rabbit and Grass Blanco and Reposado agave spirits, our Uma gin, and the Wasatch Blossom tart cherry liqueur.
And that's the awesome sourced cherries. How much cherry juice do you get from that?
It's a lot of cherries. We talked to the farm about it, you know, in the process and everything, because we obviously, it's not a seasonal for us. It's a year round. So they actually process the cherries and freeze it. But there's about 330 cherries in every single bottle.
Wow.
So it's pretty intense, actually, how much cherry goes into a single bottle.
I'm really excited. And then James just came off a party this last weekend, and he went through a few bottles of that.
Absolutely. Just a little bit of that in our malt whiskey is amazing. It is a really good cocktail.
Wow. I cannot wait. Well, let's do this. So what's the story behind the vodka?
The vodka is an interesting story because it started out on our Uncharted series label. We knew we needed a vodka in our lineup. You need a vodka in your lineup, especially when we opened, you know, 6.5 years ago. It's the number one selling spirit in the country. So the guys our size, James as well, you know, you need a vodka because 1/3 of the people walking through the door 6 years ago were looking for vodka, right?
Hey.
The problem is I don't drink vodka. So that was a challenge for us. We really struggled. It was supposed to be earlier in our lineup. It ended up being our third release when it was supposed to be kind of right out the door, right?
Right.
Because I just couldn't come to grips with it. Because I need to be passionate about what I'm making. There needs to be a connection there for me. So we were experimenting. And then one night we were sitting on our deck having drinks. And my wife, you know, as smart as she is, goes, "You're overthinking this. You just need to make it out of something you care about making it out of, and that's agave for me." So our vodka is actually distilled from agave, which is obviously a really exotic and expensive raw material for making a vodka, but there is a payoff. So we found that passion, and that passion for me comes from the raw material. The agave is definitely my raw material of choice, and we made a vodka from it. We bottled it on our Uncharted series label. Huge hit. I've become a vodka drinker because of our Ogden Valley vodka. I call it a vodka with a purpose. So there's two things that are unique about it. You already know one, obviously what we make it from, the fact that it's made from agave. And the other thing that's unique about it, it hasn't been carbon filtered. So the vast majority of vodkas that go into a bottle out there are carbon filtered prior to bottling. They're removing flavor and aroma during that step. We don't do that step. So our vodka retains character. It retains an aroma. That's where I get the raw material specifically. And it retains a flavor. It has an incredible sweet note in it.
It's fascinating to see that you guys kind of have to make, or I guess the market demands you guys to make a vodka. Vodkas, I feel like as a distiller, you're kind of, like Chris was saying, But when someone can make it well and does a good job, like I remember when Ethan was over at Holy Stone and he did with Grappa. Yeah. I'm like, okay, because he's like, I'm not just doing just a vodka. I'm doing it with purpose, right? And I like that. I appreciate that. I'm excited to try this. I haven't tried that. Have you tried this before, James?
I have.
Oh my God.
I have a bottle at home.
I'm excited because I'm trying to see when it comes to vodka, it's that kind of people, it's like almost, I don't know how to say it, but it people like vodka. Oh God, you're a vodka drinker. You know, it's all flavored vodka. You got the cranberry vodka, the Smirnoffs, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean because you now open the floodgates for making a vodka, does that mean you have to make a flavored vodka?
I think flavored vodkas are a little bit harder because they're normally mass produced with just neutral grain spirits and then flavoring put over them. And so they can sell them for $14.99, you know, $16.99. And by the time that you work with something like Chris is working with the agave, I think the last thing you want to do is put a flavoring over it and instead enjoy like the natural beauty of that. And that's what's so tough about, and you know, people ask us that all the time. Mm-hmm. When are you going to do some flavored stuff? And it's like, well, probably never.
So why would you have to flavor it if it's already good?
Yeah.
And that's,
I think James said it perfectly. You know, I've always said I'll never have a flavored vodka in our lineup. And then I almost kind of ate our words there a little bit. We did a contract distilling job for an artist collective. They were really involved in the R&D process, and it was a strawberry and jalapeno infused. And then we redistilled it into an essence, and it was absolutely jaw-dropping. It was really an awesome thing.
Was that the peanut butter and jelly?
Yeah, exactly. It was an artist collective, and that was their currency at Burning Man.
Yeah.
So they took that entire batch to Burning Man.
That's really cool, actually.
It was really
cool. That's an awesome story. So, Chris, if someone comes up to you in your facility and be like, hey, when are you going to make a flavored vodka? What is typically your response?
I say, well, give ours a try as it is, because it has a flavor to it. It has a character to it. I just, like James said, if you're going to be adding flavoring post-distillation, you're better off to start with a much cheaper neutral base than what we have here. This is a very expensive neutral spirit because it's made from agave.
I got to say now, what's your fascination with agave? Why is agave so close to home?
Well, I've always, how I got in this in the first place is I started out as a tequila enthusiast. I think that's the nicest way of saying that. I'm really, really into that as a spirit. I think it's because I was raised in Phoenix. So our closest beach is actually in Mexico. So if you're driving to the beach from Phoenix, you drive south. You end up at Puerto Penasco, and that's where I started drinking tequila at a very early age, obviously, and all those trips down to Mexico. And it kind of became my passion. So we started doing non-traditional vacationing, I like to call it. It means we go to Mexico two or three times a year, and instead of sitting by the pool or sitting by the beach, we would see how many distilleries we could talk our way into. I don't know why my wife let me do that, because that's a really weird way to vacation.
It's dangerous, right? Dangerous.
But we had a lot of fun doing it, and I saw enough things at many different distilleries, how they did things differently, that I wanted to learn more about the process. So I got a couple technical books on distilling. I'm a very technical person, if you haven't figured that out yet. And the problem is distilling is still very sensory driven, very flavor and aroma driven, period. And you can't read flavor and you can't read aroma.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to experiment. You know, when I started at a 10-gallon scale,
right,
you don't know what those flavors or aromas are that you're reading about in the book. You actually have to experience them. So that's how I got started as a tequila geek. Well, obviously in that process, you learn a lot about the raw material, right?
Yeah.
You become very attached to the raw material. That's why my personalized plate on my truck is agave, right? I've had that plate for like 20 years now.
Oh, I didn't see that. I gotta look at that.
Yeah, it's been on like six different cars now over that entire 20-year span. But that's definitely my passion product from a raw material perspective.
That's beautiful.
Is anybody else doing it with agave? I've never heard of anybody making vodka.
There's one distillery in Colorado.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not very good.
Yeah.
I hate to say that. I'm gonna have to edit that out. But the guy's an asshole too, so you don't have to edit it out.
No, but I actually enjoy this vodka. This is unique.
Definitely unique. I like to keep it in the freezer personally. It's much more enjoyable once you get it down to 0 degrees. It also gets a little thicker. You notice it has a viscosity already, but that viscosity even increases when you get it down to 0 degrees in the freezer. And I love a vodka martini from time to time. And we do drink them quite regularly. Matter of fact, that's what Ashley took home last night, was a bottle of vodka so we could do vodka martinis.
Yeah.
And I like it from time to time because you can do anything with the garnish. With our gin, which we haven't tried yet, I always steer people in a definite direction with the garnish, but with the vodka, the sky's the limit. So one of the early experiences we had, we did a dinner event with Proper Avenues, and the opening course was a Ogden Valley Vodka Martini, and they used blue cheese stuffed olives, something I would have never considered for our gin, right? It was incredible, though, with our agave-based vodka. It was just like an incredible combination, and I just said, yeah, this is a vodka with a purpose for sure.
It's got that sweetness to it.
Yeah.
Definitely got a sweet.
I love the mouthfeel. The mouthfeel is like amazing. You know, that nice flavor just coats your mouth. It stays in there. You know, going back to the viscosity adds to it and stuff. But it's got a great mouthfeel.
But not syrupy.
Yeah, not syrupy at all.
And we have only sold the vodka here at the distillery for the first 6 years. We released this in July of 2017. And it has only been sold here, but we actually listed it with the state in January of this year. So it's trickling out there now.
Congrats.
I just checked on it and it's in 13 stores right now.
Congrats, brother.
So if you go to the DABSware website and look for products, you can find our Ogden Valley vodka in 13 stores right now.
Ogden Valley, OG Valley. I can't believe that. O-Town, O-Town Valley. Chris, well done. Because I'm not a vodka person either. So I think I would have done, because I'm going to put it in beer terms, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating for us. How I do it is we have to take, basically, I'm extracting sugar water from grain, and then I have to give that to said yeast. And the yeast does, I just make sugar water, I don't make beer, right? The yeast makes the beer. And they will munch on said sugar. And if you do your job right, majority of the sugar should be gone. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, a lot of people want me to put fruit and flavors back into the beer, you know, sugar back into the beer. And it kind of, as an artist, it kind of kills me. But then I try to think about it. Kind of like, I guess Ashley is kind of like my wife, just OG and you know, puts us in our place a little bit. It's like, but how can you be an artist still and create with the things you've been told to create with? Like, hey, how can you still make a beer flavored beer, but then put sugar back in, you know? And I'm like, okay, so now you're pushing my boundaries. I have to get uncomfortable to make something good. Damn you.
Yeah.
But you did it though. This is an example of why you're not a vodka person, but you did it with what the knowledge you have and your passion. And this is still a passionate beverage. I can still have it. Enjoy
totally this. Totally passionate about this vodka. You know, we've already talked about the raw material, but I'm also very passionate about the technology that it takes to make it perfect. Oh, yeah. You know, that's a big component to me as a technical person, as I love watching the machine work. When it's actually making the vodka during that second distillation.
I think my jaw was to the floor when we were talking. Chris was showing us the tour.
The equipment, yeah.
What the hell? And you named one Veronica, right?
Yeah, the 500 liter refreshing column we've had from day one. Her name is Veronica with a K.
Veronica with a K.
Has to have a K in there.
That makes me so happy. Chris, you get cooler and cooler. I tell you what. I like this though. This is well done. Are you ever going to do a vodka with agave there, James?
Probably not.
Good call.
Yeah, probably not.
Is the goal to stay in Utah with New World?
Yes. We have a distributor in California.
Okay.
And we have a virtual direct-to-consumer retailer in California. And that has worked out really, really well for us as a model. We've gotten, you know, more and more popular year over year here in Utah to the point where it became really hard for us to, quite frankly, keep up.
Okay.
So we have to, like, pedal as fast as we can. And so we didn't want to, like, commit to another state where we literally are doubling our demand that we wouldn't be able to meet. You know, we need to be able to meet the demand here in the state as our demand grows. But the model in California, even though we don't have a sales force in California, has worked out really well for us because people come here on their ski vacation, visit the distillery, fall in love with something, go home, they can order it and have it shipped directly to their house, which has worked out really well.
That's lovely.
The other surprising part we found out about having the distributor in California is we've organically crept into liquor stores and bars and restaurants in California, just organically without a sales force. That was really surprising to us. But we, like, for example, someone will come here, fall in love with the gin, go back to San Francisco where they live. They go to their same restaurant every week. They talk to the bartender, go, hey, we found this gin in Utah. They have a distributor here in California. Next thing you know, we're on their shelf.
That's awesome.
So it's actually worked out really cool for us, that model.
James, I feel like you need to do something like that.
I know.
That sounds amazing.
I know. We do need to get
organic
on.
Growth.
Yeah.
Can't put a price on that. Growth. I guess you could, but let's not do it.
Yeah.
So let's try this next beer. I want to go to the tequila, because you're a tequila person, Chris, and heaven forbid, that's the one product I don't keep in the house, because I also am a tequila person. And so I'm very curious to try this. I've tried it before. I mean, it's the first product. This is what sold me on you guys, is this and the gin. Those are the two that were being showcased at Brew Distillery a couple years ago. And you were one of the hits. You think you guys and Outlaw Distillery were the hits at Brew Distillery that year. I think because everyone, you were kind of new to the scene.
Sure.
And the cocktails you guys were providing were fantastic.
Good to hear.
I'm glad that you're still kicking, my man. So tell us tell us the story behind the Blanco.
It's quite different than a Mexican Blanco. I always tell people, you know, we use the exact same raw material, the same species of agave that tequila is made from, which is very specific. You know, there's 150 species of agave out there and they vary wildly, but we're using the exact same species of agave that tequila is made from. So you'd think it'd be more similar than dissimilar from a Blanco tequila, but ours is quite different. You know, as a beer maker, it's because every step in the process matters, and we do every step differently. And I know you'll be able to appreciate why this is so dramatically different. And once again, the best way to see that is to try them side by side.
Right.
So taste ours side by side with the Mexican Blanco, you'll see what I'm talking about. But we do three major things differently, and they all make it quite a different product at the end, or different spirit in the bottle. Number one is the fermentation, which you'll appreciate. We actually ferment this using a non-traditional yeast strain. So that has a huge impact on the flavor and the aroma profile of the resultant spirit. And you can appreciate that as a beer maker, right?
Absolutely.
People just don't think that. They think, well, it's the raw material matters. No, it's the raw material and the yeast doing the work that matters. And so we actually ferment ours using champagne yeast, which is a non-traditional yeast strain for fermenting agave, obviously.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, huh? Yeah. We were concentrating on the flavor of the fruit. That's what we really want to concentrate on, is the flavor of the fruit. And we also talked about that using that yeast strain resulted in a very, very long fermentation for us. That is a good thing, again, because you have the organic material present with the alcohol for a much longer period of time.
Yeah.
Therefore, we get a much bigger agave flavor transfer to the alcohol. And we also put ours in a bottle at a higher percentage. We put ours in the bottle at 44.5% alcohol by volume versus traditional 40. So there's 11% more alcohol in our version, but we're doing it for the same reason, again, though, for flavor. At the higher proof, dramatically bigger flavor. We talked a little bit about it with whiskeys, right?
Yeah.
At that higher proof, we can generate so much more flavor. And then we distill it quite differently than they do in Mexico, where it's traditionally double pot distilled. We distill it one time, and we treat it like a brandy during the distillation step in the process. Okay. Because brandies are made from fruit, and they're distilled in the manner they are in order to highlight the flavor and the aroma of the
fruit. So you're still respecting the fruit aspect of the agave.
That's the most important thing to me, is the flavor of the agave being showcased, centerpieced, right?
Yeah.
So the result with all those process differences from beginning to end is we have a much bigger agave fruit start. We have a much bigger body in the middle at the higher proof, but we don't have that third dimensional by design. We don't want that earthy third dimension in there. We want it to drink like a brandy, quite frankly, highlighting
I was going to say, I don't get that earthy tone to it.
We're trying to avoid that. I'm a three-dimensional spirit drinker, but I made this two-dimensional by design. This is definitely my Frankenstein. This is my baby. Wow. This is what I drink.
Yeah. This is really, really good. It pulls a really nice sweetness out. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just naturally sweet. It's got that fruit forward sweetness.
It's got like a palm fruitness to it. I love it.
Cool.
Wow.
This is the flexible one. I tell people, if you're making cocktails, use the Blanco. You know, people like will try to make a martini with the Reposado or a margarita with the Reposado. I always tell them, no, you want to go with the Blanco. Trust me on this.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And you said you did an Añejo once?
Yes. We have an Añejo in our lineup right now. It's currently sold out. We just released it a year ago. June of 2022 was our very first release.
Yeah.
For our Añejo, we'll have it back in the bottle here at the distillery only just in time for Christmas this year.
Are you excited for that?
I am excited because people are, the demand is really built up for that. It's going to be a scary release for us, I think. We're going to have a big rush on that release day, I think.
Excited release. It's going to be, you got to be excited, not scared, excited. I think it's really cool.
I know, it gets uncomfortable when I have a line out there.
Yeah. Call us, we'll come help. Come
yeah,
help,
sure.
So. Yeah, I'll entertain, I'll dance while you guys,
there you go.
You know, that's easy.
We can get you on the cash register.
But James, what do you think about this?
I think it's amazing. Yeah, that sweetness comes through really, really nice on it. Once again, the mouthfeel, everything that you guys have. And I think, you know, going back to the vodka, maybe not filtering it with that char, leaves that in. It's in beautiful with this. You know, a lot of people ask me, like, do you guys ever throw sweeteners or anything in? And, you know, at Sugar House, we don't put anything like that. And I knew that, I didn't even need to ask you. I knew that you guys didn't put anything in there, but it does really pick up like there is something in there.
I appreciate you saying that part because that is really what has ruined the tequila industry. You know, starting out as a tequila geek as a young person and to see what has happened to the industry now today where it's just literally been ruined. And there's a lot of things when Big Booze took over tequila and when it became super popular, they did a lot of really bad things. One of them is additives post-distillation.
Yeah.
It's extremely common in tequilas now and it really has been the downfall of tequila. There's only 13 family-owned brands remaining in all of tequila. All the other brands have been bought up by Big Booze, and they're doing really bad things. The biggest one to me is additives post-distillation.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think you were seeing that a lot in the wine industry, too.
They are. When I get people on the wine tour and we talk about, or on the tour here, when they talk about wine, same thing happening in the wine world, too. Exactly. Yeah,
that's sad. We're too much of a consumer nation that we need to understand, just appreciate. Got to appreciate a little
more.
But of my knowledge, you're the only agave user in Utah.
Yes. Agave spirits is now a legal type here in the United States. And that just happened in May of 2020. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's a brand new legal type. So that's my next personal mission. Is, you know, when you go in the state liquor stores here and they have gin and whiskey and liqueur and
rum,
all the different things on the wall up there, and they have the one section that says tequila. The new type is agave spirits. That's a new legal type here in the United States. I want all the state liquor stores to change that to agave spirits because not everything under that sign is actually tequila, right?
Yeah,
that's true. You got mezcal in there. You got Sotol, Bacanora, you know, Ricea. You got other agave spirits in there, and they need to change the name to be more generic. And now it is a legal type here in the United States.
It's good to know.
As well, yeah.
So are we going to ever see a mezcal type out of here?
Well, mezcal is, there's to make a mezcal, well, we can't anymore. Because as of February 2016, mezcal is now a denomination of origin as well. That just happened in February 2016. Okay. So mezcal can only be made in 7 states in Mexico now as of February 2016. Before that, sure, we could have made something and called it a mezcal here. That would have been the first thing. But now we can't do that. I am interested, though, in other species of agave.
Okay.
I've done a lot of talking to people about the ability to bring other species of agave here other than the Weber Blue that we use. The problem is we're pretty big, so we demand a pretty large quantity.
Yeah.
And we demand a really high quality. But I am hopeful someday I will be able to bring other species of agave here. And I'm also really, really interested in sotol, which is made from, it's not an agave species, it's made from a plant called Desert Spoon. The technical name is Desaurillon, but that's one of my favorite spirits in the world is sotol. So I'm working a line on that where I can bring Desert Spoon here and we can make a sotol. That's cool. Kind of on my list as well.
But can you do like a kind of a unique turn of it? Like, can you word it differently? Because this technically, for the people who aren't understanding what's going on, this is a tequila, but it's not a tequila. You can't call it a tequila.
Yeah, can't call it tequila.
It's agave spirit.
We make it here in Eden.
So can we do something with the...
We could. For mezcal, that would be a different species of agave.
Right.
Different cooking technique. And that's why mezcal has a distinctively smoky flavor, because they actually smoke the fruit in a pit underground for 3 to 4 days. It gives it that distinctively smoky flavor. These are all things I wish I could bring some of those wider dimensions to. But, you know, since this is, though, made from the same species of agave as tequila, though, I like to have people try them side by side, because then you really see how different it is.
Yeah.
The bigger proof, the more concentrating on the agave fruit, just because of the process differences we talked about.
Well, I love watching or having some of my friends bring back those family-owned tequila producers, and they'll bring them back, and then you try it side by side, and it's night and day different. Yeah. Like, I'm not going back to the domestic bullshit after that.
100% agree. That's why I don't buy very much tequila anymore.
Right. It's tough. I mean, I got to travel to get the good tequila, which 100%. I'm okay with that, because it's an excuse to go get a vacation, right?
Yeah.
James, what do you think about this?
I think it's awesome. Chris, I got a question. Is it the seven same counties that tequila is made, that mezcal is made, or are they separate?
They're 100% separate. Are they? Tequila is the state of Jalisco.
Yeah.
And it actually, all the states in Mexico that touch Jalisco are allowed to grow blue agave, and you're allowed to call it tequila. So, for example, we were just down there in February, and we drove through Guanajuato and Michoacan, and both those states touch Jalisco. So we drove by many, many fields of blue agave as we transitioned between those two states. Mezcal, though, it has to come from seven states in Mexico, none of which are Jalisco. The primary state is Oaxaca still, but when we were down there this last time, we had a ton of different mezcals from states other than Oaxaca. So we actually went to a mezcal bar that we're doing flights and states of mezcal made from states other than Oaxaca, and it was fantastic. Some really quality products, especially out of Durango.
Yeah.
Some really amazing
stuff. That's really neat. So the one thing I think that's so cool about mezcal is it seems like they wing it a little bit more. Like, they let open fermentation. It's just kind of naturally made, where, you know, we want to do things the same way. We want to be precise. We want to see the same things every time. And it's kind of cool. Like, at first I was having a hard time when I was down at someplace seeing that. And I'm like, but wait, they don't know what their pH level is. They don't know what their, you know, and, but then it was like, wait, that's not bad. That's really cool, you know, in a way.
Yeah. It still is very village centric. Mezcal, where, you know, tequila is big booze now, right? It's not village centric at all. So if you go to mezcal country, it's still kind of like pre-prohibition here in the United States, you know, where every town had their own distillery, right? Down there, every village has their own mezcalero. And so every village will have their unique riff based on that mezcalero and that in that village. And you see some really cool things. And then each village will also have a festival version that they do that is very unique to their village. So I really like to see those like special things they do as you jump from village to village and how different they are.
And that's the cool thing about your small series batches. Can you kind of do that take here? Because like, we're kind of more clean, more precise here. Because in my mind, every time you open a Bud Light, it should taste like a Bud Light every single time. Every time I have, you know, the Sugar House Rye, it should taste like that same rye every single time. Right. I get that. But that nuance of having that creativity and that kind of uniqueness is something you can't, like, once you have, this is the batch. If you don't get this batch, you don't get it again.
Yeah.
I love that too, because it's my favorite day when I'm making something for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm making something new. We have to babysit the batch the whole time.
Yeah.
Constantly tasting, constantly testing, constantly tweaking. Those are definitely my favorite days in the distillery, when you're doing something for the first time.
I was thinking that when I asked you about mash bills. Like, I love messing with just like, oh, this is different because of this. This is a different yeast. This is a different grain.
All
like,
that.
Those are the fun days of like, which do we like better?
Exactly. You know? Those are where you keep your creativity alive and well.
Absolutely.
As opposed to just being in pure production mode.
Yeah.
Where you are all about consistency, making sure everything's exactly
the same. It goes back to being a robot. I don't want to be a robot. Yeah. Makes sense. Robots can't love. I'll say it right now. Maybe in the future they'll love, but right now they can't, okay? But what I think is I would rather have something at the very end that this product was made with love. Whatever I made as a craft brewer or craft distiller, I want to give you this product and I'm excited. Like, I want to hear the stories. Like, why are you so excited? Tell me, like, why should I be drinking this right now? Well, because I went and did this, and then I had a bad day. I had to do this. I want the story. Mm-hmm. Or if you just hand me a bottle of Bacardi, like, okay, I know it's Bacardi. And next, like, what do you want?
Yeah, 100%. You just don't follow the checklist for the sake of the checklist. No. You need to look at every step in the process and attack it and how you can do that step better.
Yeah,
that's what you need to do. So, if Bud Light was good enough, all the craft breweries would be making Bud Light, right?
Yeah.
That's weird. Not good enough. I'm not going to a craft distillery outside of Utah and being like, oh yeah, I want, what's your Bacardi? You know,
exactly.
You're making Bacardi? Yeah. I want that. Yeah. No diss on Bacardi. If you drink Bacardi, go for it. But I want something that the artist gave love in, and it's their 100%. Take on it. Yeah. And that's why I love you guys, because you guys are doing something for the scene and your passion. And I think you guys, I will stop supporting you guys once the love is no longer there.
Please it's always going to be there.
I think you guys will quit.
It's always going to be there. We'll quit first.
So what kind of barrels were these in?
Next up is our Rabbit and Grass Reposado or Agave Spirits. It's a closer relative to a Mexican Reposado for sure, because we do a couple things very traditionally with them. One of them is the barrel. But going back to what makes it more traditional is we actually ferment this using a traditional tequila yeast strain. So as a beer maker, you know, has a drastic impact on the flavor and the aroma profile.
Huge.
And the personalities between the two fermentations are dramatically different too. The Blanco is a super, super mellow fermentation. This is a super angry fermentation in comparison, because that tequila yeast strain really loves agave as a sugar source, so it really gets after it. It's also in the bottle at 44.5, same reason again, higher proof, bigger flavor, but it is distilled quite differently, and it makes a huge difference in the resultant flavor and aroma profile. We treat it like a whiskey during the distillation step. And why do we treat it like a whiskey? Because it's going in a barrel, and we want those earthy third dimensional notes going in the barrel. What we're trying to avoid with the Blanco, we're really trying to highlight in the Reposado, those earthy third dimensional notes.
Damn.
And then, like you said, the last thing we do is it's aged in a used bourbon barrel, which is very traditional in Mexico. And the bourbon barrels specifically come from Wyoming whiskey up in Kirby, Wyoming.
Beautiful, boys. See, I don't think it's the same. Like, it's not the same tequila or agave spirit.
Yeah.
Same raw material. Completely different process, though.
That's the craft in it, though. You know what I mean? Because I give me the same malt. Give me a different yeast. Give me how I treat that. Or give me the same yeast, same malt, and how I treat it. Different beer.
Totally.
Yeah.
Same holds true for spirits. People don't realize that. I went to the fermentation for distillers course down at White Labs. Amazing course. They have some of the smartest yeast people in the world there. I'm at White Labs. But what they did is during that class, they worked with a local rum maker, Malahat Spirits. I love those guys. But they did the exact same process, the exact same batch, exact same distillation technique. The only variable across the four samples we had was yeast strain. And you would not believe how different the spirits were from each other, even though they were working with the exact same substrate, the exact same distillation technique, dramatically different with one variable, the yeast strain. So every step in the process matters.
It does. So on that note, I want to ask you about your water. What's the water like here in Eden?
We have unbelievably amazing water here at the distillery. And it's not by planning, it's by pure dumb luck.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, this is the only 7 lots in the entire Valley Zone for manufacturing. But before we broke ground, we actually sent a sample out for testing. And the answer was, this water's been pre-treated. I'm like, has not been pre-treated. We're actually on an aquifer here. So we're super lucky.
Wow.
We're on an aquifer right here on the North Fork River, which runs right by the distillery right here. So our aquifer is almost visible from our parking lot over there. And the water is incredible. A couple years ago, I upgraded my RO system, my reverse osmosis system. So the sales guy came up, tested our water again. He goes, you don't need an RO system. Your water is perfect. I'm like, well, wow, I'm buying it anyway because of variability, right? I'm buying it anyway. But that is how great our water is. Our water is incredible. It presents some challenges because it's extremely soft. So you have to really monitor the pH crash there at the beginning of the fermentation. But we knew that going in because we had very, very soft water. We get a little variability in the spring because of the snow runoff. So we see a little increase in hardness and a little increase in pH during the spring. But I've been here long enough now. I know it's common and I expect it, right? Yeah. That's good. The only bad thing happens, we had the two consecutive years of drought. What happened is the aquifer was running dry, so they started augmenting us with well water. Didn't tell me.
Oh, snap.
Big problem. So what we saw is obviously that's bad news for our RO system, right? Using that well water. So that was a very costly fix. And then what we started seeing is our finishing gravity started creeping up on us insidiously just through the change in water chemistry.
Wow.
So I had to do a lot of research, a lot of calling around, a lot of testing. We've changed some things to try to future-proof ourselves against this. One is they just need to let me know.
Right.
Our water changed. I mean, that would be really helpful to know, right? So climate change definitely hurt us there when we had those two back-to-back years of drought. We saw our water change, but normally, and thankfully we had a massive winter, our water is impeccable. It's amazing.
But think about this area too. You have three ski resorts within a stone's throw away. The snow up here is amazing.
Yeah. Especially this last winter.
Yeah.
Snowmageddon. I remember that.
So that snow is going to be extremely good water.
Oh, yeah. It is remarkably, it's almost impossibly good water out of the aquifer that we're on. And it's ironic because I live 3 miles from here and our water at our house is horrible, super hard, horrible water. But the water we have, luckily, right here, we've lucked into just absolutely amazing water.
Yeah. So, Chris, one thing I'm noticing, I'm getting taste. I mean, I really look for like voids when I'm tasting something and I get an amazing flavor right off the bat, 10 seconds, a really nice flavor, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. That mouthfeel, the viscosity just kind of sits in there. And that's probably my biggest test when I'm tasting stuff. And I mean, everything we've tasted so far has just been a great flavor, great flavor, great flavor. Francis in the industry calls it donuts, that they're, when you get that void. Mm-hmm. And there has been absolutely no void in any of this stuff.
Thanks. Like I said, typically I'm after all three dimensions and I'm after, big in all three dimensions.
Yeah.
The Blanco is an exception. Like I said, it's two-dimensional by design. I usually like to drink things that are three-dimensional, but this one definitely fills that void.
Yeah.
A couple reasons there, obviously the fact that we spent time in a barrel and the fact that we distill it like a whiskey, it gives it that really big third dimension in there. You definitely get the bourbon notes in there. That's why I drink it like a whiskey.
Yeah.
I drink it straight. My wife Ashley pretty much exclusively makes old fashions with it. So if you're not having Reposado old fashions in your lineup, you probably need to give it a try because it's amazing.
And why rabbit and grass? What's the significance in that?
That's a really good question because it's a weird name, right? And a lot of that is because of the trademark issues in the alcohol industry, right? It's really hard to find a new name or something related that hasn't been trademarked. We could talk about this all day, quite literally. But all of our names come from the art. So on the bottle, that's Maya Wheel, the goddess of agave, but it's our custom trademarked version of Maya Wheel, the goddess of agave. And the name comes from the Aztec calendar, actually. So the Aztec calendar is a system of repeating days and weeks, and each day and week has a nature symbol, a glyph associated with it, and each day and week has a god associated with it. And rabbit is the day and grass is the week that Maya Wheel is the god of. So it comes from the art on the bottle.
Boom.
Is your designer is local, right?
We have we have two artists that work on our bottles for us. But we started with a local artist back in 2014 because obviously we wanted to get all the art done and trademarked before we put anything in a bottle. So his name is Tyler Davis out of Salt Lake City. We've had him since 2014. And instead of having him design bottles, though, we just commissioned individual pieces of art. So we didn't want him to say, hey, here's a bottle, put art on it. We actually did individual pieces of art.
That's cool.
So the first thing we did was the Compass logo. That is our company logo. The second thing is the dragonfly on the Uma Gin. This was actually our third piece of art, the Maya Wheel, the goddess of agave. We sent him all the ancient renderings of Maya Wheel, told him what we liked and didn't like about each one. He came back with one question. Can I make her a little more feminine? Because she's pretty fierce, in the ancient renderings. And this was literally a first draft piece of art.
Damn. So he did it. He sent it to us. We go, sold, done.
Yeah.
Let's put it on the bottle. But yeah, we had a local artist. And then when we got to the Ogden Valley Vodka, Tyler, our local artist, actually came up with the concept. We couldn't get it done by our deadline. So we handed the concept over to our other artist, who's up in Vancouver, British Columbia. She took his concept and put it on the bottle, which is amazing. Yeah. And then her name is Amy Hazelman. And she also did our Wasatch Blossom Tart Cherry Liqueur bottle from the ground up. So yeah, we have two artists. We've used them from day one. And ironically, when we got to the Ogden Nine Rails Bourbon Whiskey, they collaborated. Tyler locally did the logo, and then Amy put it on the bottle with all the colors. Oh, yeah. And that's my favorite bottle.
Yeah.
It's the
one
they collaborated on.
Yeah. That's so cool. And it's art. Like every step is art.
Always art. Yeah. Yeah. Art's important.
Yeah. I mean, to the product and the, you know, the label, the bottle, everything. Wow. Hot damn, James.
Yeah. It's
step
amazing.
Up your art. Let's go.
I know.
You've made major changes since you started.
We have. We really have.
Yeah, for sure. I remember the first time I came down. It was in the original bottle with the original art. I remember that.
Our gold rum, we still have in the original bottle, and we're just actually switching it over.
Yep.
Feels good.
Can't throw a glass away.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, James.
Yeah.
So then the next one is this flagship, is the OG, right?
Yep.
So then why the Dragonfly? I got to know the story.
Well, we had a couple concepts for things that my wife likes as for art. You know, one of them is a hummingbird and one of them was a dragonfly. Where we live up here by Nordic Valley Ski Resort, up by that perennial creek, Pine Creek, we're loaded with dragonflies in the summer. It's one of our favorite times of the year. I mean, literally, we have millions of dragonflies up where we live on the side of the mountain. So the dragonfly was on our list. We gave it to Tyler. Like I said, it was a second piece of art he did. But I don't know if you've actually had a close look at it. It has iconic Utah imagery in the wings, the snow-capped mountains and the delicate arch and the honeycomb pattern.
It's awesome, huh?
I've never noticed that.
Yeah, it's an incredible Utah piece of art. It's actually a Utah piece of art. I remember one of our biggest Instagram posts is we went to Arches, put on our head. Went out at 3 a.m. with our headlamps on, hiked out to Delicate Arch, and we got a picture at sunrise with the Uma bottle with the Delicate Arch in the background.
Oh, and sick.
It's so perfect because it's the exact same perspective that's on the Uma bottle. But the dragonfly is because where we live.
And then the art because of Utah, and then Uma. What's Uma mean?
Just like the explanation with Maya Wheel, the goddess of agave, the name comes from the art. Again, so Uma is the Hopi cloud deity, and that's why there's the clouds on the back of the bottle, because Uma is the Hopi cloud deity, and the dragonfly works for Uma to identify sources of water for the desert Hopi. So if you live in the desert and you see a dragonfly, that's a good thing. You know there's water nearby, because they start their life in the water, so that's where the legend came from. But it goes back to a much more complex story. This was not our first choice. This was not our sixth choice for a name. We were trying to get a name trademarked. We finally had one. We thought we were going to get through the process. And then that big booze came after us. We got a cease and desist from Sazerac. And so we literally gave up. My wife's like, I can't take this anymore. It's so emotionally draining. I need someone else to do this for us. So she handed the project off to our son and said, come up with a name related to the dragonfly. And he came up with the Hopi legend about the dragonfly. So our son actually named the gin.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
I love the stories behind this. Holy cow, that's remarkable. And it's so pretty. And it's so staple, because I remember people ask me, oh yeah, New World, they're the one with that dragonfly on the bottom. I'm like, yeah, you know. And then you guys are also known, in my mind, how I hear it is the agave spirit.
Okay, good.
You guys only do the agave spirit.
We'd like to be known for both of those things.
I'm like, hell yeah, that's those guys.
I always like to say that, you know, the pretty bottle would get you to buy a bottle once. And then once you buy a bottle, we got you. Because once you taste what's inside, that's the only gin you're going to drink.
That's the nectar, right?
Yeah.
That's the important thing, right?
Are you ever going to barrel age this? Or you've done before?
Yeah, we do. We do a barrel-rested version of the Uma gin. We used to do it on our Uncharted series label as a single-barrel version. It's so popular and so incredibly good. We actually moved it to its own custom Uma label now. So we have a version of the Dragonfly for the barrel-rested version now, too. The problem is we age it for over a year in a sweet vermouth barrel. And sweet vermouth barrels are very hard to get. And the winery I was using in Oregon went under during COVID. So we just printed a bunch of bottles, screen printed a bunch of bottles, and now I can't get sweet vermouth barrels. So that's my next challenge, is getting sweet vermouth barrels in the building. So we want it to be on the shelf every day. Ultimately, we want it on the shelf every day.
There's no anise in here.
You got that right.
I want to dump it now. Dump it.
good work.
How many times a day do you hear, I don't like gin, but I love this gin?
A lot. It's a very common thing. I've never found a gin I liked, or I don't like gin.
Yeah.
And I always tell people it's infinite. Every single bottle of gin is different from the one next to it. So yeah, you need to give it another try. But I hear that a lot. And you know, when we first opened, like I said, I'm not a vodka drinker, right? So when we first opened, we said our goal in life is to convert each vodka drinker to a gin drinker, one drinker at a time, right?
Yeah.
Now we have the Ogden Valley Vodka, so I don't do that anymore. But yeah, we hear that a lot, actually. It's our number one seller.
The reason I asked is we were up here a couple weeks ago. My wife did a taste. I know she doesn't like gin, and I heard her say that. But I knew she would. Like, I'm like, she's going to like that.
Yeah.
But she just wouldn't try it because she doesn't like gin. And then,
I get that.
You know, then she tries it, and she's like, I love that.
I think people have an aversion to gin. You know, we're behind the rest of the world when it comes to gin. The rest of the world is way out in front of us when it comes to diversity in gin. In the United States, we're way, way behind. And I think that's because, you know, people had their grandma's gin when they were a teenager. And we call that the gincident. And then they can't drink gin again for the rest of their life, right?
Yeah.
Or they say it's like licking a Christmas tree. I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the primary ingredient in gin is the juniper, you know, that evergreen. That's the primary ingredient in it. But what makes this different is I think most people have in their lifetime here in the United States, unfortunately, have only been exposed to London Dry Gin, which is a very, very narrow category of gin. It's also a very one-dimensional category of gin. Juniper, citrus, and coriander, all front of the mouth, where this is a three-dimensional gin.
Yeah.
You know, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and has incredible balance across the three dimensions. That's how you drink. That's how you make an incredible gin, is you make it a three-dimensional and balance, which is a very important part of the process.
But I think you're missing something, too. Like, a lot of gin you pour, and you smell it, like, 30 seconds later, and you don't smell it. And I'm still picking up just a nice aroma on that.
That's because we use more than 100 times the botanicals by weight that you get in a big bouche in, more than 100 times. So it's like a craft stout at 9% ABV versus high fructose corn syrup Keystone Light.
Yeah.
A lot more raw material goes into that 9% ABV stout.
Makes sense.
Yeah. A lot more raw material goes into our
Makes a lot of sense. But for me, I think visually the prettiest gin in Utah is Holy Stone Cerulea Gin. On the palate, though, this is the most beautiful gin I have had in Utah.
Cool.
It's like this medley of just flavor after flavor. And remember that thing you said, the not the void?
Yeah.
But like, it's still going.
Yeah. It's there. They do a really good job with that.
Yeah. I've turned into a gin drinker and a little bit of a gin geek. You know, it's hard to get gin here in Utah, or a diverse selection of gin. So the last time we were down in Las Vegas, we went to a really incredible bar. Has an amazing selection, a great bartender staff there.
Hooters.
Not quite Hooters. But we tasted, I think, 7 gins that night between the two of us. And then I think, as my wife would say, we found 2 we kind of liked out of the 7. But you just need to try more gin if you think you're not a gin drinker. Yeah. And give this a try. You might be a gin drinker.
I don't know if I want to make cocktails out of it. I mean, I can figure out cocktails, but I would like to drink this just neat.
Yeah.
It's like a cocktail in and of itself.
Gin martini. Good way to go, right?
And question for you. Is there any Earl Grey in here?
No.
I'm getting heavy Earl Grey vibes. Like Earl Grey, tea.
No tea in there. I'll tell you what the botanicals are. It's dried lime peel, white peppercorn. We talked about pepper being a mandatory thing for us. Yeah. The mandatory juniper, coriander, cinnamon bark, sarsaparilla root, sage, angelica root, and hibiscus flowers. Those are the 9 botanicals that go into our gin.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, well done.
We have 4 that are pretty varsity to work with in there. A little bit goes a long way, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to hibiscus.
Man, I have no, I'm like kind of speechless. I have no idea what to say about this one.
Yeah.
My wife isn't a gin drinker, but she'd be like Danny, she would drink this.
Yeah.
I always tell people, you know, give it a try in a lemon drop instead of vodka. It just makes a much more complex drink. Because you get the lemon doesn't hide the gin, and then you get a lot more complexity underneath and the flavor of the base spirit. So I always tell people, just give it a try in a really common cocktail, and you'll see how much bigger you can make that cocktail by using gin instead of vodka.
Yeah, my late friend Bristol would have liked this. She's the one that just appreciated those kind of boosts of flavor, and this was something that I know she would just die over.
Yeah.
Mm, my God. And this is the dessert.
Yep. Next up is our Wasatch Blossom Tart Cherry Liqueur.
This is the one that got James hungover. So
I had a rough day yesterday.
I'm certain it was the risky and not the liqueur.
Yeah, it was probably the malt whiskey.
Yeah, this one won't make you feel bad. That other one will. for sure.
So then this one's called the Wasatch Blossom, correct?
Correct. Wasatch Blossom, Utah Tart Cherry Liqueur.
And what's the significance? Why did you make this? Why is this something that you had to bring part of the lineup?
Really good question, because it wasn't in the business plan at all. We released this very early too. So we opened December 10th of 2016. This was released in August of 2017, really, really early in our cycle. And it definitely wasn't in the business plan, you know, and if you would have said, hey, you're going to have a cherry liqueur in your lineup, I would have called you absolutely crazy. There will be no chance that I'll have a cherry liqueur in my lineup. And then it ended up being a huge hit for us. Very successful. We wanted to work with something local. So we were working with all the fruit growers up here in Box Elder County to try to figure out something. We hit on this very early on that it was just head and shoulders above all the other things we were working with. So we got it to the point where I was proud enough to take it out in an R&D form to a dinner party, serve it over vanilla ice cream.
Oh,
everybody's like, wow, we need that. Yeah. And so then the Wasatch Blossom was born.
Wow. Well, cheers, gentlemen. I'm gonna thank Chris. It's not over, but
yeah.
Cheers on dessert. Cheers. I'm excited. I've actually never tried this, so I'm curious.
Glad you get a chance to.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually wet my palate.
Yeah, it's definitely dessert though. So after the gin, it's okay. You can definitely get around it.
That is so nice.
Why do you like it so much, James?
I like the flavor, the sweetness. What proof is that, actress?
It's at 32% alcohol by volume. So it is actually very high for a liqueur.
Yeah.
I mean, I always tell people it's a real drink. I've seen people mess that up.
Yeah.
Because it can definitely sneak up on you because it is 32% alcohol by volume. And where most liqueurs are sweetened with refined sugar, this one has zero refined sugar in it. It's actually sweetened with organic agave. The same agave we use to make our agave lineup is what we use to sweeten
the
Wasatch
cool.
Blossom. So a lot of the flavor actually comes from the caramelized sugar in the cooking process of the agave. It's that you have to have that note in there, the caramelized sugar note in there.
Yeah.
So I like it in cocktails. We talked about making your lemon drops with gin. Make your lemon drops with the cherry in place of orange.
Yeah.
Unbelievable combo, the cherry-lemon combo. But the most popular drink and why we're on a lot of menus is a simple one. Champagne glass, 3/4 ounce of the cherry liqueur, top it with a sparkling wine. The drier, the better. Makes an amazing sparkling wine cocktail for sure.
So I have this idea that you and Ashley throw the best brunch parties. So next time you guys have a brunch party, let me know. I will drive my ass up here.
We drink well, but we don't throw good brunch parties because we generally don't like people. We like dogs.
It's okay. I'm not a person. I'm just that guy.
Yeah.
The co-ed guy.
Yeah. Yeah. People always say, when can we come over to your place for margaritas? We're like, no.
Never.
Never. Not going to happen.
This is so fun. Likewise. This has got a jamminess to it that it's... I can't stop. Yeah. I can't stop licking my tongue, my lips.
It's super flexible liqueur. It's also a liqueur that doesn't stay in your liquor cabinet. I mean, you definitely drink this or use it in cocktails on a regular routine basis. We go through it. All of our customers go through it, which is we like to see. And it's also why I say that the bartenders are always begging for another liqueur.
Yeah.
You know, they want something to work with just because of our limiting rules here for making cocktails in the state.
This has got some richness to it, but still has that bold flavor on both ends. And then that you're nailing, except for that Blanco, I'll tell you that, you're nailing the third dimension on each one. And I'm like, good God, like I haven't even finished mine. I'm still having it.
It's in your mouth. It's just.
Can we barrel age one?
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to see what a barrel does to this.
Yeah, we certainly could, actually.
Or put some of that oak spirals in
it. I never thought about that. That's a really good idea, actually.
I just thought of a Taste Masters collab with the New World.
There you go.
Barrel aged Wasatch Blossom.
We could prep a barrel with your Wasatch Bloom and then throw some whiskey in it.
That would be a really cool collab.
We could get a barrel, put it in there, leave it in there for 6 months, keep rolling it.
And then Christmas. Another Christmas present, Chris.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that idea. And since it's 32%, it's a really safe thing to put in a barrel. So that'd be a really good project.
Yeah.
Boys, I think we just nailed the collab.
Yeah.
But a few last questions for you, Chris, before we leave today. What's some holdbacks here at New World Distillery that's happening for you here in Utah?
Well, it's Utah. That's probably number one. Like I said, it would be nice to have some flexibility on, you know, having remote tasting rooms, having the ability to sell other people's products that were locally here in the state. I mean, there is a little bit of a focus on local right now that's new, but they have the local section and the Utah Zone program. You know, we have a couple Utah Zone products in there as well. But I always tell people, if we want to make progress here in this industry, we just need to vote better. That's like the bottom line.
It's true.
How can we, as besides voting, how can we as the Utah consumer, as the beer community, distillation community, the cider community, sake, the fermentation community support you guys?
I think that's a great thing because there's an incredible amount of beer geeks out there, an incredible amount of wine geeks out there. And I mean, for me, the craft beer industry is our role model in the craft spirits industry because we're behind them and, you know, by a decade behind the craft beer movement. But what the beer geeks did for that movement is incredible. And that's what we want to generate in the craft spirits industry. So I think that's a really good lead into what can be done better. We need to develop more spirit geeks out there. People that are passionate about buying local, understand the difference of what's in the bottle that they're buying, you know, good things, bad things. We talk about additives, post distillation and all those kind of things, how it's made. I think if we develop a following like craft beer did, that will be the thing that will take us over the top.
Absolutely.
We just got to follow the craft beer industry model, and they've set the path for us. You know, just put something remarkably better in the bottle.
Yeah, and like you said, let's as long as I can get my product in front of you, like you guys will do the rest. You know, and that's why I try my hardest to give a little bit of spotlight to you guys. Like, hey, just give them a try, and then you guys will. I know for a fact you guys will take over.
You nailed it. I mean, you have the best answer for what we can do better is just get it in front of people.
Yeah, get it in front of people.
Yep. It's so hard. You go to the liquor store and people, you know, buy the big national brands just constantly, and you do a tasting, you know, but that's what's so hard about it is to get somebody to taste it.
That's true.
I wish we could do that in state liquor stores like they do at Total Wine.
Yeah.
It's just set up on a Saturday in a state liquor store and do tastings for the people that are walking in and grabbing that bottle of Tito's instead of a Rognan Valley vodka, right? They'll taste the difference.
We're going to be able to start doing stuff at liquor stores. So we're going to be able to start going in and promoting, but we won't be able to do tastings.
But I still think it's a step in the right direction, correct? Because I think what's going to set us apart from everyone else is education.
Sure, totally.
When you guys have people come into your distillery, you're like, hey, let me just educate you. And then you make the decision, right?
That's all I say is you make the decision. But you need to have that education as a baseline for sure. We just don't have it in the spirits industry right now. Yeah. They do in the beer industry for sure.
Right. And I think, we should step that up. I wish how sommelier is one for wine and then we have Cicerone for beer. What's something in the spirit world?
We really don't have anything.
A Spiro A?
We need that.
Well, even the master distiller thing is kind of a little hokey. Like, you know, it's abused a little bit.
And totally.
There really is no definition of it and stuff. So, and we probably do have some master distillers in my eyes here in Utah. But at the same time, it's one of those things that it's a little gimmicky.
Yeah. And especially the way it's being used.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for sure. I think that's a great idea on the sommelier thing.
Yeah.
We need something like that. I think that'd be great. A certification program
education.
That would be great. We have a level 3 sommelier that works for us. One of our employees is a level 3 sommelier. Invaluable to have her on staff because when it's tasting day, come on down.
Yeah.
We need to discuss this, you know, and she's invaluable to us because she has that. And she could also, you know, work on the nomenclature and the lexicon you need to use. So you have a common baseline, right?
Correct.
So I think that certification in the spirits world would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Really I think the Utah Guild can make it happen. I think you guys can somehow, you know, up and figure that out in a different way. Another conversation for another day. But gentlemen, I do want to say thank you so much for being a part of this. James, thanks for chauffeuring me up here today and being here and celebrating one of my new idols in the distilling world. So Chris, it was a pleasure meeting you. I think you are a wizard. I put you up there with Alan and James. I mean, holy shit. You know what you're doing.
That's high praise.
You have the love, man. And it's palpable as soon as you opened the door before we even showed up. Like we were arms wide open. You're just ready to share your craft and your passion. And to me, that's the art within the artist is that's you. And you're embellishing that.
Yeah.
Well, those are kind words, but I mean, I appreciate you coming. I mean, this is very valuable to get the word out, people following your podcast and being able to hear a little bit about us. So I have the same, you know, mutual gratification to you coming up here today. So thanks for coming.
Thank you. Always welcome.
Oh,
that's good to know. I'm legit going to come watch you guys mash in one day because I want to see this. I want to see Veronica go. I'm like, I have an eye on her all day. She's my lovely lady right now.
Veronica with the K.
With the K. But James, Chris, thank you so much. On that note, gentlemen, until the next beverage. Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Taste Masters.
find us on Instagram at @_Tastemasters, Twitter at @TheTastemasters, or on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, DM us for any questions, or leave a review. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.